Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
I think some of the people in the comments were worried about that when I first said that, because they were from Vegas and they're like, you don't get it because you're just thinking about it from a tourist perspective and you're looking at it with rose-colored glasses. And so I was like, okay, maybe I'll take that into consideration. Like, what would it be like if I lived there day to day? And we actually spent a week living at our friend's house, like to see what the daily life was like.
I also think that people maybe don't necessarily know us insofar as they don't know that Nikki and I are the ultimate tourists.
Hello and welcome back to Shit They Don't Tell You. I'm Nikki Limo.
Hello, buddy. What's up? It's Iceman.
It's the Iceman, Steve Green, and the Ice Woman, Nikki Limo. The Icebreaker, Breaker Breaker 123, the Queen of Cats, the first of her name.
I heard one of those nicknames, but that's about it.
Which one? The first of her name?
No, Nikki Limo, because it's technically a nickname.
Queen of Cats?
It's not your full name.
It is not my full name anymore. But anyway, hello, welcome back. Thank you for joining us today. I had prepared this topic based on something a friend said, and it was going to be the show that was going out before Anthony Lee. But I'm actually really happy that it's going out second, because Anthony Lee brought up pretty much all of these points. And I just wanted to go over them a little bit more in depth because, I mean, I already prepared this topic, so we're doing it.
Love it.
Yeah, and I just thought we could conversate about it a little bit.
Okay.
So, the comment that my friend made, and shout out to Ray, he's out in Vegas, and we're on a WhatsApp thread, and he randomly was like, hey, you know what? You and Steve are really good at pulling the trigger on things. Like, a lot of people talk about doing things, but you guys actually, like, we'll pull the trigger. And I was like, huh, yeah, I guess that's true. And he's like, yeah, not many people would just uproot their lives and move to a different state and rebuild from scratch, even if they knew that it would be better for them in the long run. Like, you know, it's definitely the right move. He was like, it's definitely the right move for you guys, but like, it's just a big thing to do. And I started thinking about that because in my mind, it didn't feel like a big thing to do.
Hell no, it didn't.
But that's not the first person that said that. In fact, so a lot of our family members had a similar reaction when we said we were moving to Vegas.
True.
Some of our friends did. Some people in the comments did. And I thought that was kind of surprising. But I guess because I knew what happened behind the scenes, like everything that went into that decision. So maybe as an outsider, it did appear like, holy shit, you guys are uprooting your entire lives that you built for the past decade and a half and going to somewhere completely different. And I also would go on to say this is not the first time or incident or trigger pulling that people have had that reaction to. You know, both you and I dropped out of college to move to LA to pursue our dreams.
Yeah.
And that also seems like a very big, risky move. But when there was a lot of thought put into it, it didn't really seem like a risky move at the time that I did it. So I wanted to delve into that because, one, I don't know. I wanted to know what separates people who aren't willing to pull the trigger, which seems to be possibly the majority of people. And two, is it really a big risk? Is it a logical decision or is it an emotional decision?
That's really the thing for me is risk management. Mm-hmm. I actually am, you might not believe this about me because everyone knows me as the Crypto King and all this stuff, but I'm incredibly risk adverse.
Same.
When it comes to actual risk, right? So like, mm-hmm. and I'm not talking about like, okay, you're leaving college to pursue a dream. That to me was not a risk because I knew what I wanted to do and I trusted myself to follow through on that. And, you know, the idea of like, okay, I'm going to go, you know, I was doing City College at the time and I was like, this is not for me. Mm-hmm. Me and school never got along very well. I had fun in school more right. than I like learned in school. So then, yeah, leaving that and going like, okay, I know people like in the comedy world because I come up on the improv world while I was in high school still. Mm-hmm. And then like I transferred that from that doing professional improv, right? So I built a skill set doing that like fucking every night, right, for like years. And I trusted myself. I'm like, you know what? If you put me in the room with anybody, you get me on the camera with anybody, I can at least give them something, right? Like mm-hmm. I can give them something and help make the person in the scene with me look good because that's to me what a good improviser does. I can make the person opposite me look good because that's the only reason why I would look good is that I'm not taking the limelight. I'm not doing it all.
Yeah.
Because so I have that skill set.
Because you trained in that skill set. Exactly. Yeah? So this is what I'm talking about is that when people say, oh, you dropped out of college to go do this like random thing that like very few people get make money doing. Really college is to me the same thing. You're going to school to build a skill set. That's what you're going to school for. That's what education is going to learn how to do something that you will then get a job doing that you will be trained in and then now applying to work in that field in the hopes that it will pay off for you.
Yes.
And that's what you did. Mm-hmm. You just didn't get a degree showing like, hey, here's a piece of paper showing that I am competent in this skill set.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I could go to Juilliard or some shit, but that wasn't what I was trying to do either. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and sometimes I think that's why the stigma exists. It's like there's this little piece of paper that makes it official that you put... It's not even official that you're competent in that skill set. It's official that you put the time into going to learn that skill set. That's all that piece of paper says is like you showed up.
Yeah, you showed up and passed some tests. Even people that I know who have that certificate, my sister, right? She's a veterinarian. She'll tell you, like, look, a lot of that was powering through tests and memorization shit, but when she actually got on the job is when she learned. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's just one of those things where, I totally can understand that because nothing I've ever done, like, where it comes to writing movies or anything I've done, you know.
Did you really learn it until you actually did it? Yeah, absolutely.
Good Lord. You write, like, so many movies before you even sell one either, like, two. So, like... That's all. It's just one of those things where it's not like I was like, okay, I'm now ready to write a movie
because
I've learned so much. It's like, dude, no, you just got to keep doing it.
There's a process. So it's one, it's like learning like from a book, you're studying it, but you haven't done it yet, right? And then you go do the thing that you trained to do that you feel like you can do, but now it's like to verify, can you really do it? And then once you do it, you like make mistakes doing it and you're like, oh shit, now I'm really learning to do the thing.
Exactly.
And then it's just repetition from there, improving, right?
Yeah, and then even like, so let's talk about risk too, right? So like, you know, with crypto, we'd never put in more than I think 20 something thousand dollars.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And we did very, very, very well based just on a small amount of money for us, right? Mm-hmm. So like and that's it for like over years, right? So
right.
like
yeah,
the fact that, you know, we can sit here and say we have like we did we really
put
want
less
crypto.
Into crypto than we have in our IRAs right now.
Exactly.
Yes.
So that's what people don't understand too is like maybe they'll laugh at the beginning of the show where I say I really manage risk, but that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I've been laughed at too for saying that because it doesn't appear that way.
No.
With the lifestyle that we've made,
yeah,
it doesn't appear that we're risk averse.
Right.
But that's why I wanted to do this episode because I thought that was so interesting to me because I feel like we're both pretty logical people when it comes down to making decisions.
Yes, careful. I would say we're careful.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean I'm not going to make a risk.
Mm-hmm.
I will, but risk management is the key, right?
Yes.
I know that if I fuck up, it's not over for me. I have all these other avenues. I have other income streams, all that stuff. I'm taking a risk with this amount of money, and that's my plan.
Like the percentage.
Exactly.
Yeah, that you're taking a risk with.
That's it.
You're not putting all your eggs in one basket and throwing it in the fire.
And I've never done that, and I'll never do that.
And same.
Yeah.
So I actually looked into this, and there was an article I came across that I'll try to put it in the description because I don't know if I have it saved. Did I have it saved? Oh, okay. I did have it saved. It was from Inc.com. And it was called What Successful People Know About Taking Calculated Risks. And this was exactly the vibe that I was, the mindset that I was in when I was thinking about this topic. And they say it all comes down to fear. And fear is what causes you to overestimate risk. Because a lot of people will think about going outside of their comfort zone and they start feeling that fear, you know, like, oh shit, this is, I've never done this before. Oh my God. And they start freaking out and they think that that's a gut instinct, that that's the wrong decision.
Right.
Like their gut is, and like biologically, it's saving you from the unknown, which could lead to your death, you know? So your survival depends on the known, the secure, even if it's not better for you or logical. It's an emotional decision, but you think it's logical because we all like to think we're very logical creatures, even though, unless you've really made a list, a pros and cons list, and analyzed it from a non-emotional perspective, then you're making an emotional decision, whether you know it or not.
100%.
So there are many people in my life who are miserable in their day-to-day lives, who I know have the potential to do what they really want to do, but they've convinced themselves that they're doing what they're doing out of safety and security. They think it's a gamble to get out of the comfort zone, and they think that their gut is telling them not to when it's just discomfort. So I wanted to dive into that, into what this article says. And it said that your level of fear usually has nothing to do with the actual level of risk you face. Take, for example, public speaking. It's often cited as the number one fear that most people have, but public speaking isn't actually risky. So there's some social risk. You might like, people might judge your speaking, you might get embarrassed, maybe you forget a line or whatever, but you're not actually risking your life, even though your body is telling you, holy shit, we're gonna die.
Yeah,
like if we mess up, we're gonna die. but yeah, your body's wrong. There's not actually a risk for the average person, you know, that for the average person, people don't even think about jumping into a car. You know, you'd go into a car, no problem. You're not scared. You just go in there. However, car crashes kill people every single day. And statistically, the odds of dying in a car accident over the course of your lifetime are 1 in 606, but there are 0 chances that you'll die of stage fright.
Dude, that's really bad.
Yeah, 1 in 606.
Holy shit.
Yeah, you're more likely to die in a car crash than you are an airplane crash, than you are from...
Well, that I knew, but I didn't know it was that bad. 1 in 600.
606, yeah.
That's bad.
I know.
Yo, we got to do better out there with the cars there.
I mean, I don't know what that sample size is from. Are they taking, you know, from India and all kinds of like really high traffic places? Yeah, maybe like look at your local market of car crashes. But yeah, that's the global odds of dying in a car crash.
Good Lord.
Yeah, but by the same token, the absence of fear causes you to underestimate risk. So you should have like a healthy amount.
Well, now I'm scared shitless of the car, so thanks a lot.
That's why I never leave the house.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, see? Well, that's not why. I really just don't like leaving.
Yeah, you don't places. Like people that much.
Well, I like people. I just don't like doing, like
crowds.
Going.
I don't like going. Okay.
I don't like the process of putting on my shoes and actually leaving. I like being that. At the place.
Yes.
But the actual like transportation there, I don't like.
You also don't like crowds.
I don't like crowds, no.
Yeah.
But so that's what I was getting kind of confused because I really do like going to play poker and I like the social aspect of it. You know, I like shooting the shit with people. Like I thought I would like it because I don't have to talk to anybody, but I actually like to talk to people.
That's true.
Yeah.
It just depends
but
on the context.
But it's smaller, it's more intimate.
You like shooting the shit.
I like shooting the shit. Yeah,
you do.
I like making people laugh.
Yeah.
On like a small stage.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's cute. Also, yeah, with poker, I mean, you manage risk really well in poker.
Oh, yeah, that's another one. So poker's considered gambling. Gambling's like, well, Nikki, how can you say you manage risk if you're gambling all the time? But I actually studied the shit out of poker and the profitability of it and learning certain strategies. If you're playing game theory optimization, then how much are you profiting? If you were making EV positive decisions, these are all...
What's EV positive?
Is expected value. If you have a positive expected value with each decision that you're making, meaning that if I played the hand 1,000 times, it would be profitable, even if I'm losing 30% of the time.
Right. So that's your strategy, is you understand the
math behind
it. Yeah. And
if you really study the math behind it, it's just a fun game. It's a strategic, really fun game, depending on who your opponents are. And it's very profitable if you can tell where your edge is, and if you're not using too much of your bankroll, which you were talking about earlier with crypto. You know, I don't go in there with $10,000 and then my first buy-in's $10,000. Like, no. I don't do that.
No.
Like, my first buy-in is maybe $200.
You said your first big win, though, I gotta say.
Not my first, but definitely my biggest win ever.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. You're like real big win, where I'm like,
because my birthday was pretty, that was my previous
big win. That was your
first
time getting over a G, right?
No, on my birthday?
Yeah, your birthday.
No.
It wasn't?
No, my first time getting over G was actually online when I first started playing online. But my birthday, I got pretty close to 2,000.
There you go.
It was at 1,900. And then 2 days ago was...
Wait, it was at 9,000?
No, 1,900.
Oh, okay. I was like, what the
fuck? No, I said pretty close to 2,000.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that was on a $500 buy-in. So, I walked with...
RY little 4X?
Yeah, sure.
Almost 5X?
Like almost 4X.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it was 1,900.
Yeah.
Yeah. So nice. Almost 4X.
Nice.
Yeah. And so 2 days ago, my buy-in was 600 and I walked with 2,400. So that's 1,800. And then I went and played again at a different casino at a smaller stakes and my buy-in was 200. I walked with 641. So my overall buy-in was 800 for the day and my overall walking was over $3,000.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, like you said, you bankrolled all this. So like when you decided to like, hey, poker's going to be a little side hobby of mine.
Yeah.
Here's how much I'm going to spend. It will never be above this. And you've never had.
I've never pulled out more money than the initial.
Yeah. It's all been the same little cash thing that you mm-hmm. have.
Yeah. And I also, I keep track on it's called a bankroll tracker. And it tells you all of your statistics. It tells you your win rate, your ROI. Your winning session win rate, the way that you keep track of win rate in poker is your BBs per 100 hands, which is how many big blinds you've won per 100 hands. So if I'm at a 1-2 stake game, the big blind is $2. So how many $2 did I win? And then if I'm at a 2-5 game, then the big blind is $5. How many $5 did I win? And it averages it all and it tells you your win rate. And a good win rate is 10 big blinds per 100. Mine is currently at 13.
Ooh,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
And so yeah, it's good to know all of that. To me, it's not a risk when you know the actual numbers. Because when you're I was in a downswing. I just came out of a downswing. And it felt like I have never won. It felt like I was so much in the hole that I like, holy shit, I suck. And there's no way I could possibly be profitable right now. But if I didn't have the bankroll tracker, I wouldn't have known that. I would have been like, I should quit.
Yeah,
but I looked at the bankroll tracker and it's like, nah, bitch, you're still up $3,000 overall.
Since you started playing poker.
Yeah, since you started playing. And that was only, or since I started keeping track in July. So that was only 6 months ago. So
exactly.
So yeah, like calm your nuts. You have a positive win rate and it's pretty good. So this is just variance because it's hard to tell if you're just based on your emotions. It's like, is this forever? Am I bad? Is this never going to go away? But if you look at actual facts, just numbers alone, you know, take the emotion out of it.
Yes.
Then you can make a rational decision.
That was me in crypto bear market, dude. It was just like, hey, I know why I bought this. So
yeah.
Everyone's freaking out. Everyone's leaving. Everyone's panic selling. I know why I bought this.
Never make a big decision out of emotion.
Never.
And check yourself because your brain will try to convince you that it's logical, but like really make a list, like do the things that are that are actual logic. So now I was saying that the absence of fear does cause you to underestimate risk. Some people have the opposite problem where they think they're not taking risks at all because they have no, they can't foresee a negative outcome. They're overly optimistic.
They're delusional.
Or they just feed off the adrenaline so much that they don't even care what the outcome
is.
They're
there for the action.
Yeah, exactly.
I know the type.
So when you have no fear at all, like when you're really excited about a new opportunity, there's a good chance that you'll underestimate risk. And additionally, you'll overestimate your abilities and your chances of success.
You will get wrecked.
And that's why people fall for get-rich-quick schemes. Yeah. The promise of a giant return on their investment deludes them into thinking that they're going to succeed because it doesn't feel scary. They assume it's not risky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something to look out for, too. So I want to speak more to the people that are so risk-adverse that they're taking away an enriching life that they could be having.
Yeah, they're missing opportunities.
They're missing opportunities, yeah. But if you are one of those people that overestimates
your... I'm an action junkie.
Yeah, like, maybe you could calm down a little bit and also benefit from making a pros cons list.
Maybe benefit from therapy as well.
True, true. I also... So that was from the article, but I also wanted to add to this that fear can come from a lack of understanding. I think you were talking about that with you're talking about the crypto projects. If you don't really understand the thing you're getting into, that of course all you have is your emotions. Mm-hmm. Is the like, oh, I can make a lot of money, or like, oh, I could lose a lot of money. That's all you have.
That's why I beg all my crypto corner people. I'm like, look, you can't buy something because Steve Green is buying something, right? Because I've done well. The only way that you're going to be able to defend your investment, knowing that you bought it, is if you know it inside and out, you're so versed in it that you can explain to anybody hating on it or anybody in your life who's like, yeah, I don't know about that. Actually, you should probably sell all that. Yeah. There's so many people who just listen to their uncle or whatever, their friend who's like an engineer, and he's like, this doesn't make any sense, actually, and I'm an engineer. So like, they're like, oh shit, if he's an engineer, he probably knows everything about how this crypto stuff works too. But that's just not how this shit works,
no.
Right? So then, you know, people get wrecked because they listen to the quote unquote smart ones, and then, you know, maybe 2 years later, they see it all blew up, and then they tell their friend, like, hey, it all blew up. And he's like, well, yeah, it'll just go down eventually. You'll see. Like, these people just, you know, they double down on being wrong instead of trying to open their minds to what they're missing.
Yeah, I heard a quote that was like, once you decide that you know something, your brain closes to new information, and it's not open anymore to being proven wrong.
Imagine taking an entire, like, new part of our economy and just going, nah, I know what all that is, and it's a scam, or it's an energy drain, or whatever, an environmental problem, or whatever.
Yeah, just labeling, just
writing
something.
It off.
Nope,
I'm out.
Yeah,
it's just, yeah, it's not.
It's just the same as when, like, people go, oh, like, women aren't funny. Just blanket, like,
dude, exactly.
Women aren't funny because I saw three female comedians that I didn't like.
Dude, and you know, having done improv for a long time,
there's a lot of guys that aren't funny.
Good lord, yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say.
Just the talent pool is,
it's just how
smaller
it is
for women. Yeah, I mean, it's the same in poker, to be honest. Like, because there's a female has never won the World Series of Poker, for example, and so people are like, see, women can't play poker, and that's why they need these ladies events, because they can't play poker. But really, there just aren't as many women playing. So statistically, the odds of a woman getting all the way to final table and winning the entire World Series of Poker is much smaller than a male going, because the talent pool is much smaller.
And not to simp for you, because this is going to sound like it, but isn't it kind of weird? Isn't it kind of a whole nother thing to not just, you're not just sitting there? Because when I'm sitting at the table, I don't have to worry about a bunch of dudes who want to fuck on me, right?
Oh, yeah.
But like, when you're sitting there, like, it can be annoying, because it's like, you know, people are trying to like maybe make moves on you while they're making moves in the game and shit.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's got to get annoying or whatever.
It fucks with them more than it fucks with me, to be honest.
Well, I know you, yes.
Yeah,
but I'm talking
me.
About like
with
women,
women
in general,
yes.
Getting into poker.
Oh, absolutely.
That's got to be, because I know there's like female, all female gyms, because
women that
chicks
do,
just can't take it anymore.
Yeah, I have to go to the women's section in a gym, because I don't like being sexualized when I'm trying to be in the zone. But, you know, women in poker that are successful in poker, they have had to create very thick skin. Same with comedy. Women in comedy that are successful in comedy, they've had a lot more skin thickening to do than the guys. However, that being said, because I started in comedy, it's so easy dealing with that in poker. Dealing with hecklers on stage
Oh, yeah.
is so much harder you know, in comparison to dealing with dumbass little poker players that want to try to make some jokes and they're not good at it.
There is something lame too because of the stereotype that women aren't funny.
Yeah.
So then when you get up on the stage, which you explained to me, I'm really just saying what you've explained to me over the years, is that, you know, when you're on stage, you feel like you have to represent all women all of a sudden.
Yeah, I do still kind of feel that way sometimes. It does suck when if I'm at a poker table and I lose a hand, but I played my odds correctly. So it was the correct decision to make, even though I lost. But then dudes that had already been trolling are like, oh, I can't believe you called that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like I need to win for all women sometimes. And it sucks. Yeah, like it shouldn't feel that way. But as far as the sexualizing goes, I love when people try to make me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it never works, and they always get so mad by the end of it.
Oh, dude, your brother did that to me like the first time.
Yeah, I remember.
We went to a restaurant. I was like, you know, eating with your family for the first time, really meeting everyone, like getting to know them for the first time. And I go to the bathroom, and I'm the fucking America's troll. Then I'm like, it's like 2013. I start going to the bathroom at a urinal, and then your brother comes up next to me. He's like, yeah, you're gonna be nervous having to go to the bathroom next to Nikki's brother, huh? And I'm like, no, I don't give a shit. And then I kept on talking to him, and then he actually couldn't pee.
I love that.
The best.
Yeah, the other night I sat down at a 2-5 table at Aria, and immediately I was wearing a Packers sweatshirt, and this guy goes, "You're a Packers fan, get out of here." And I was like, "I'm like, what are you?" And he's like, "I'm a Vikings fan." And so then we started talking, and then he was like, I went to go get some more chips, and he was like, man, that's the kind of girl you want to marry. Like a Packers fan, a football fan, and then she's like, she's playing poker. Like, that's the kind of girl you want to marry. And then I sat down, and my very first hand that I engaged with, because I hadn't played a hand yet, was I had pocket jacks. And he open raised, and I 3-bet him, and then he 4-bet, and I called. And we went to the board, and it was ace jack something, like ace jack 5 or something like that. He had ace king. I had jacks. He raises. He c-bets. And I raised him on his c-bet all in because at that point, if I were to call his bet, I would have less than half of my stack left. So I just
c-bet means you can
continuation
see the
bet.
Oh, continuation.
Yeah,
bet.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just a standard.
Got like, it. I'm like. Learning.
So anyway, I shove all in. So that's the very first hand I was in, and immediately I'm all in, but I have a set of jacks. And he has ace king, and it's basically just a min raise for him to call, but he's like,
what the hell's a min raise?
Oh, it's just like I just doubled his bet because that was all that was left in my stack.
Okay.
So then he didn't call, and he shows everybody that he folded ace king, and I was like, that's weird that he didn't call because he didn't play his odds, but also that was the correct call because I had
the nuts, as they say.
And then he didn't like me the rest of the game.
Not the girl you want to marry. Not the kind of girl you want to marry.
And I was like, and I told him, I was like, am I not the girl you want to marry anymore?
You're a deceiver.
He said I was bullying him.
That's amazing. Amazing.
And I think he meant it.
Well, he's a Vikings fan, so you know, it's been a rough, it's been a brutal life.
Yeah, I do feel bad about that.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna go on a break, but when we come back, I do want to break down, how do you assess risk with logic? What are some like helpful tips to how you can take a situation that you might be on the fence about, that might make you feel uncomfortable, but you kind of like really, you kind of want to try it? Is it the right move to make at this time in your life? Would it be a really risky thing, or is it not actually that risky and your emotions are just fucking with you?
Ooh. All right. We'll be right back.
All right. That's juicy, right?
Go download Best Fiends and start playing it. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings. But I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to, like, thanks for listening to our podcast. And if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us.
Like, listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're, like, kind of desperate.
We're giving shout outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings. So huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blake.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
Hello, we are back. And I know I left you with a pretty juicy cliffhanger on like how to assess risk properly or how we do it. I'm very curious to hear your insight as well because... I don't know if we do the same things, really. I imagine that we do, but maybe we don't.
Let's hear it.
Okay, so make a pros and cons list. I've probably said this several times during the episode already, but a pros and cons list is so, it's so easy to see visually, you know, whether it's like sometimes it'll just be right away. You're like, holy shit, there's a huge list of pros and just like two cons. Easy no-brainer. But I was just, our mind was exaggerating the cons so much that I thought that it was a really risky thing. Or sometimes it could be like, okay, there's a long list of pros and a short list of cons, but the cons are really, really, really big. And the pros are like really small. Like they're like small benefits that I'm getting for this really, really big sacrifice. So, but at least seeing them in a list, you can visually compare the two. And you're not forgetting anything. There's not something that you're overlooking. Because that's the other thing, too, is like when you're making a decision, you want to make sure you have all of the information present to look at rather than like just looking at pieces at a time. Otherwise, there might be something that you're totally overlooking.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think what I do personally, it's interesting. I was actually just, you know, Anthony Lee was staying here with his fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, her name is Nina, and we were all... at lunch, you went to play poker.
Shocker.
And we were at lunch together, us three, and me and Anthony are kind of like talking to her about crypto stuff because she doesn't quite get all of it, and she's just learning through him and he's learning through me, and so it's one of those things, right? But she was asking him, she was asking me, Steve, you know, who's your crypto sensei? Because Anthony calls you crypto sensei, but who's your crypto sensei? And I was like, that is a really good question.
Yeah,
because when I came up in the space, like, there really wasn't, you know, now there's like this YouTubers all talking about crypto stuff, like all that vertical of like social media people talking about crypto stuff. And, you know, when I was buying Bitcoin in 2013, like that, none of that existed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just, it's really just when I was coming up in the space, going to Reddit, like learning from there where other people are just sharing their stuff. And then eventually... because me and a group of guys all went into this coin called OMG together. We all kind of got wrecked together. We had like such a brotherhood that I would say that is like almost my crypto sensei group. Like it's like,
yeah,
we really learn from each other. Like there's not like one person in the group that everyone's just like learning from. It's everybody is interested in different parts of the space and we all kind of, you know, communicate.
Unite.
The ideas. Yeah.
In business, that's called a mastermind group.
That's exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And see, I didn't even know that. It's just one of those things that just like a lot of things in crypto, the more that I've learned about the space, the more that I understand that it mirrors a lot of successful, you know, stock strategies and business strategies. Just because I've been paying attention to this space, I think it applies to this space. But then the more I find out about like what you got into with options trading and stuff, I realize how much if it crossover. Is mirrored all over. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's really great that you got into that naturally.
Yes,
because a mastermind group is really cool. If you are interested in one thing, like if you're like, let's say you make toy planes and like model planes, and you're just really fucking into it. Like you're like, man, I wish this was all I did for a living. Like I wish that I could leave my job because this is so much more fulfilling for me. But I just don't know if I can make it work. And then you meet up with other people that have made it work. And then other people like you that are trying to make it work, but that haven't quite done it yet. And you all share tips and things. It makes you way more confident and also realistic about about how feasible it would be to leave your job to go make model planes. What were the setbacks that the people that made it, what setbacks did they have that you should look out for? You can learn from each other. And that goes for any, really any business. I was just at a poker meetup game. Again, shocker. But it was for a poker vlogger that I watch all the time. And it was hosted by two poker vloggers. And the other one, I hadn't watched any of his videos yet. But I'm very new to the poker community, especially in the YouTube world.
Not for long.
The YouTube poker world has really only been around for like 3 years. So afterwards, they were like having drinks with people. And there was a very small amount of people going to have drinks, which I thought was odd, because why wouldn't you take advantage of that? Like to be able to ask them questions and see like what, you know, what's insight they could give you. And so there's only like five of us having drinks afterwards.
Really?
And I'm asking him all kinds of questions, because not only am I on YouTube, but now like I'm getting into poker. And I was like, hey, like, how did this happen? And he was like, well, I was a poker player first, and then we started a YouTube channel. I was like, yeah, that's how old school YouTube used to be.
Yeah.
Everyone was like an actor or a musician or whatever, and then we were just doing YouTube, and now people are actually being like YouTubers. Yep. as the only thing.
Kids growing up are like, I want to be a tuber.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
And so one of the guys was like, oh yeah, there's a forum that we're all part of. Everyone except for me was part of that forum. And his name's Johnny Vibes. Shout out to Johnny Vibes. He's the poker vlogger that was like talking with all of us.
His name's Johnny Vibes?
Yeah.
One of the coolest names I've ever heard about.
I know.
Kidding me?
Go check him out. He's actually really chill, really down to earth. He gave me a hoodie.
Oh.
So I got some swag too.
That's right.
But yeah, they were all part of this forum, and they had come together through that. And then they go to meetups together and they see each other. But the guy was like, yeah, I basically learned poker from this forum, because everybody... Like I knew how to play poker, but everybody exchanging so much information at a time, and you know, certain spots, like sharing certain hands, like what would you do in this hand? What would you do in this spot? And then like getting the right knowledge so the next time you're in that spot, you know what to do.
Yeah.
He's like, I learned everything from that forum. I got so much better. I became so much more profitable. And now he's getting backed by investors to like go play poker for a living. Like he got to quit his job and he just moved to Vegas. And he's just, yeah, a guy that liked poker, got really involved in a forum where he's exchanging information with people that have left their jobs to play poker. And now he's doing it. He's doing the thing. And he, I think, did a proper risk assessment of making sure his skills were at the place they needed to be, and talking to people that had done it before him. And then he made the leap, and it's paying off for him right now. I also added to this list, though, to think of the worst possible thing that could happen, too, because I don't want you to overlook that part. If you were going to make a big decision, what is the worst possible mm-hmm. thing you think that could happen?
I lose 20-something thousand.
And could you stomach that?
Exactly.
Could you overcome that? Could you get through it without being absolutely devastated? How long would it set you back? You know, all of these questions are the things I would ask myself about the worst case scenario before jumping in.
Yeah, exactly.
How likely is that worst case scenario to happen?
And how well can I manage my risk? So like, you know, I put in 20-something-odd thousand dollars into crypto, right? But we pulled that in 2018 before everything went like really down, right?
Yeah.
So like
everything else was just profit.
All profits. And that's the kind of I tell this to people all the time, like, you know, because a lot of people in Crypto Corner have experienced like 5Xs and like stuff above that where they're like, this is crazy, or like even like 10Xs or whatever, right? But that's great. And that's great. But you have to really, once you do that, like once you've gotten like a 10X, like, or even if I tell people who have 5X,
mm-hmm.
like you really should pull your principal, because then you're good.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about anything. You're just writing profits.
It's icing after that.
That's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, just to try to manage risk, right? Because otherwise, you're exposing yourself heavily if if you miss something.
Right.
And you might miss something. This is a volatile market, right? So yeah, I mean, especially when you're winning.
Yeah.
Like, as hard as a lot of our people have won, just pull your principal and you'll feel really good.
Yeah, you can get really complacent and not realize it when you're winning.
Yeah.
And then it causes you to be a little too loose. And not as sticking to your system.
We'll talk about emotions, right? Like,
yeah.
When you know, some people were buying into Luna at like $5, for example, right? Now it just recently went to $100. So you're talking about
20X'd.
You're constantly in a state of euphoria. You're fucking running around in your house. You can't believe all the money that you've made, right? But it's not secured unless you make a move to secure it, right? So at least pulling your principal. I mean, fucking hey, you're taking profits too, like, makes hella sense as well. On a rip like that, like, I think the emotional aspect of it keep people from securing their assets.
Yeah.
And that's what I wish more people did, because, you know, there is a lot of memes involved with crypto, and there's a lot of up only attitudes, right? And like, I can only make it, I will only win. But, you know, and that's all fun in the moment, but you not acting on your gains is a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. You will absolutely get wrecked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wish and every time I say this to Crypto Corner, they all laugh at me because they're just so excited about the gains. But I'm like, no, really, you need to be taking profits and pulling out your principal 100%.
Or if you don't, you're going to get a very expensive education.
That's
on
exactly it.
Why not to?
That's exactly
it. Yeah.
And I don't want you to have to pay for that education as highly as I had to pay for that education, right? And you know, did I pay with real world dollars? No, because I pulled my profits, right? But could I have had even more ammunition to scoop the bear market had I cashed out on like my last insane gain rip? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned from it, right? And frankly, I am so glad that happened to me, because I learned so much and I have so much more awareness about myself and myself in this market and how the market like is than I ever would have had without it.
Well, and it's like you said, you didn't have a sensei back then. You know, now the senseis are formed because they were the trailblazers. They went through the hard knocks. They learned the hard way. And now they're like telling the new people like, yo, avoid this, and this. I'm telling you. I mean, and that's shit they don't tell you,
that's
too.
Exactly
like,
right.
I just, like, I feel like that's why we wanted to start this podcast in the first place, was like, man, why don't they fucking tell you this? I wish I had a mentor, a life mentor that could have taught me some of this before I had to learn it the hard way.
Exactly.
Yeah. So ideally, and this is just, I think, general good investing advice for any risk that you're going to take, or any, like, especially a big risk, quote unquote big risk, is ideally, when you take a risk, take one that you stand to gain a lot in if you win. And if you lose, you don't lose much.
Love that.
Yeah. I read a book called The Dundo Investor. Dundo Investor. And he's a big value investor. And that's his motto, is like, if I win big. And if I lose, I don't lose much.
Love that.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that?
So I would like to give you back to the Vegas example, where people were like, wow, that's a huge trigger to pull. Like, that was a huge jump. Let me just go through some of the pros that I listed before we made the decision. We listed out pros and cons. One, we would save a minimum of $10,000 a year on state income tax, a minimum of $5,000 a year on property taxes, a little bit on sales taxes, and a lot on capital gains taxes should we need to cash out on crypto. Vegas is close to California. There's many direct flights, which makes visiting family easy. Also, we have a lot of friends in Vegas, so our social circle would still be there. And our friends that have lived here for 3 years said that they love it, and they also moved from California. Because, you know, it's kind of scary, like, hey, is it that different from California? And there are some differences, but overall, everyone who's moved that in our circle has loved it.
And these people are not people that are just like, we love it. These people have spreadsheets about why they love
it. Talk about risk assessors.
Holy shit.
They have whole spreadsheets and analytics on every single decision they make.
They rate the restaurants.
They have a brunch spreadsheet list, not just restaurants, but it's in categories, yes, like brunch restaurants, dinner restaurants, cocktail places. And then they'll tell you the pros and cons about each place so you can make a very informed decision.
Ambiance.
On where you want to eat.
Drinks, price.
Service.
They have categories.
Quickness.
So they don't just go places. They go home and they update their
spreadsheet. They analyze each thing that
they
do.
Yeah, we had a pretty good lead on whether we'd like Vegas or not because these people were constant and they were constantly updating us about it.
And we're like, okay, if we move in our social circles there, what if they move again right away? And they're like, no, we're staying.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere.
We're at our forever place. We love it here.
Yep.
So like, okay, that's pretty good. Another thing on the pros list was that we could get a much bigger house with rooms to shoot our podcast in, which is now shooting at home and has been shooting at our home for the past year and a half now. It was like mid-2020.
Yeah, mid-2020.
So like a year and a half now, yeah. We were like, man, it's getting hard being crammed into our dining room like our little office
and
upstairs.
Having to set it up and break it down every time was the biggest pain in the ass.
Yeah.
We just leave this room like up and going. We can just turn it all on.
So we felt like our home life would be better. Our work life would be better. Our social life would be better. The majority of the work that we do right now is remote. And we also don't have children to think about. So it doesn't really matter what the school district is like. People are like, what about the school district? I don't have a child. So yeah. I don't care.
What do you think of that?
I don't care. Why are you asking me that? Exactly. That's your problem. If you have a child, maybe think about that. Put it on your cons list. Put it on, like, maybe you shouldn't move to Vegas list.
Guess what? Vegas allows kitties, so we're good.
Yeah, we have four kitties, and they love it here.
They love it. They actually love it. You know what's funny? I don't have to be too much of a cat dad right now. But all of them are, like, so much, like,
happier. You could tell.
It's weird.
It's like, you can tell their moods.
God, what happened to me?
I don't know. When I first started dating Steve, he was like, I hate when pet owners think that they like know their pet's mood. Like they just like, oh, like you know that he's hungry right now. Oh, you know that he wants to go on a walk. Oh, okay. Like you don't know your animal. I was like, I think I know my cat actually.
Don't look at me.
And we argued about it. And now he's like, Franklin wants to be held and he wants to walk around.
It's true.
Franklin wants to inspect what's on the top shelf. It's like, how do you know that, Steve?
Dude, he's the cutest.
Yeah.
He's I like put him on my shoulders and I open cabinets and I walk him around. He smells.
He loves it.
He loves it.
Adding to this pros list, we love Vegas. We love the restaurants. There's so much good food here. There's basically nothing that LA has that you can't find in Vegas as well.
Well, dude, and I love sports, right?
Yeah.
So, football, right? And like I'm telling you, if I want, like I was telling Nikki, I was like, hey, we're going to Red Rock this weekend because I want to watch playoff football with like all the
D-gens. You know what we really should watch? Go to watch sports is Circa. They have known for like their
huge. I heard it's a triple story screen.
I heard that to buy a ticket to watch the Super Bowl in Circa, like not even at the Super Bowl, is like thousands and thousands
of
dollars.
That's so stupid.
To watch it in Circa.
I love how unnecessary that is.
It's so funny. But it's just like you're there.
But yeah, no, I could go to Red Rock, right, and watch on like the biggest fucking, you know, they have the sports betting screens. I don't even sports bet, but that, and then you sit, and then my favorite thing is I get to sit there with all the locals who they're like, hey, you got the over on this one? I'm like, bro, I don't even know what the fuck that means. You know what I mean? So I've learned through them that means like the point spread or whatever, but I barely even understand any of that shit.
I would love to learn a little bit about it just like for fun.
Yeah.
I know that pretty much anything except for poker in the casino is just straight gambling.
Yeah, I don't touch sports betting, but I do have a bucket list thing where I want to bet like a couple grand on a Super Bowl one year.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because it would just be the fucking game of your life.
If it was like, again, if a tiny, teeny portion of a bankroll, like your fun nothing. Money,
exactly.
Your play money.
Exactly. I'm talking like $500,000 or something like that. Something small.
Something really small. Like just $500,000.
Yeah.
What I really like about Vegas, and I wasn't sure if this was going to be the case, but it definitely is that it's so like calm and peaceful in the neighborhood. Like, so when you go home, you're at peace. There's like, it's nice.
No noise.
Way less noise in LA.
Old place, the noise was noisy. Wild.
And we were in a quiet corner.
Yeah, oh my God.
But LA just has a constant noise in the air. There's like a noise pollution that just doesn't go away. And there's a regular pollution. There's an air pollution. The air quality
is going away.
Terrible in LA. But then if you want to do anything big city feel, it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's 15 minutes drive and you're there on the strip. You can do anything that's big city nightlife, but then you don't have to live in a big city.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
I honestly think we should stop talking about it so much. Because
I don't want to sell people.
Yeah, I don't want everyone moving here, dude.
There's like actually a lot more on this pros list, but the one of the things on the cons list was like, oh, it's not near the beach. But the neighborhood we got has a beach lagoon. It has a man-made beach.
Which is better.
So I'm like, all right.
No how, seaweed bullshit.
I really didn't go to the beach that often when I was in LA. I did in Santa Barbara because we were, you live on the beach. But yeah. In LA for the past 15 years, I've probably gone like 2 or 3 times a year max.
Well, and how many times have I talked to you about how I think artificial things are better than anything else?
You love artificial things.
I love it.
He actually says he likes fake shit is what
I like, all the fake shit. But I'm telling you, artificial, yeah. The fact that they have artificial beaches where there's no bullshit that you have to deal with all the seaweed and all that kind of shit, it's awesome.
You get stung by a man o' war?
Yeah, I got a little crab out there.
I got stung by a Portuguese man o' war when I was 8.
Yeah, see, fuck that. No jellyfish or nothing. That.
Yeah. You have to like just worry about sand crabs. Yeah, there's tons of ducks and it's so cute. We actually have a lot of flora and fauna in our neighborhood. There's bunnies hopping around.
Yeah, me and Nikki were both sitting in our kitchen and we looked, we heard honking. Ducks honking and yeah. Then all of a sudden we look up and they fly right
those
over
those are
our
Canadian
house.
Geese. I looked them up.
Really?
So we have Chinese geese and we have Canadian geese. But the ones that flew over us were Canadian geese.
Huh.
Yeah. And they'll honk. It's like we used to have dogs barking in our neighborhood. Now we have geese honking.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah. So I was saying one of the cons was, so on my cons list, the weather, I heard it gets really hot in the summer and it does.
Yes.
We actually came to Vegas during a heat wave last year because I wanted to see like how hot does an emergency heat wave feel? Because if it's bearable, like where you're mostly inside anyway, like you're not going to be outside during it.
No.
And in the valley at the time, it was over 100 degrees
yeah,
where we were living.
It. We're valley natives,
so like,
bro.
If we're going to be stuck inside anyway during a heat wave, if it's over 100 degrees, just let's assume we're going to be inside. How bad is it? Like, how much do you have to, like, walk outside during a heat wave? And it was fine.
It was
like,
totally fine. It was
We had to walk from our hotel room to the casino because we stayed at Vidara and we were going to the Aria Casino. And it, like, it was hot, sure, yeah. But it was a dry hot, so you're not like sweating buckets like in Bali where you're like, it's humid. Ooh, yeah. And hot, like where you can't breathe.
And you got mosquito bites all over you?
Yeah, exactly. There's no mosquitoes here.
Mosquitoes are all dead here. It's fucking beautiful.
They hate it here.
I love it.
Mosquitoes are like, it's too hot. I can't believe we're moving to Vegas. It's too hot.
I didn't even know there were places on Earth that didn't have mosquitoes.
Yeah.
It's the greatest
thing.
Well,
don't jinx it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
When we first moved to the Valley, there were no mosquitoes, and then all of a sudden there were mosquitoes.
That's true. There's a lot of mosquitoes.
Yeah. So, on the cons list, it was like family now is in another state, but it's like a 45 minute flight, whatever.
Whatever.
Might have to commute to work once a month for me, twice a month for Steve, because Big Moon still shoots in LA and JK still shoots in LA for Steve.
Yep.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of a bitch, but JK is paying for travel. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that doesn't even, okay, once a month. Like,
yeah, it's not bad. Right. I mean, I'm not going to be able to do all the shoots for JK now just because it doesn't make any sense to do that, especially because. Like, we do block shooting.
Yeah.
So, like, they'll shoot, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, say, like, for, like, to get, like, one good chunk of the month done. And then we'll do another pickup, like, 2 weeks later where we'll shoot, like, 2 days. But, like, that's just not enough time for me to be there to really, like, you know, I don't want to travel multiple times a month.
Yeah.
For me, I just want to go once a month, shoot as many as we can.
Yeah.
And then get out of there.
Yeah. And then Big Mood ended up. This was before we moved. We just took the leap. We're like, okay, we're just kind of to accept that's one of the cons. But after we moved, our new schedule for Big Mood is they're coming to shoot a block in Vegas. So
see, that's tight.
It's like, okay, I'll have to go back for February where we're shooting 8 episodes and then not again until May. We're not shooting again until May where they're coming here to shoot. And then we're not shooting again until August.
Beautiful.
So that con is like not even there.
And yeah, the boys just came to Vegas. We did like a Vegas shoot and that was really fun and everyone liked that. So we might be doing that more too. So like,
yeah,
you know, it's just
things like that can happen that were unexpected. It wasn't even on my pros and cons list.
I never even thought it would happen.
I didn't think so either.
I never thought JK would leave that office.
Yeah.
For example. So yeah, it was really cool and it was really fun. So that's the best part too, is I love doing that show. So it's a no brainer to keep doing it. It's just about doing
same
it.
Same with Big Mood.
Yeah. Making it make sense.
And so then when I'm telling you to follow this list, you make the pros and cons list. And then also thinking about what is the absolute worst case scenario that you can think of that could happen. And for me, it was like, okay, let's just say we just hate it. Like, we moved, we sold our condo, we bought a house here, and we hate it. And if we sell our house, we're going to lose a bunch of money or whatever. So what do we do? Like, is that an unbearable situation? No, because if we hate it, we'll just move back.
Sure.
We just move back. Oh, you can't sell your house. Okay, we'll move back and rent our house out.
Yeah.
Like, really a simple solution. It's like, okay, you have all this to gain. And when you see it on paper, you're like, okay, wow, that really made the decision easy for us. It's like, you gain so much if you win, and there's a high chance of you to win because all of these are pretty doable, and you lose very little if you lose.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we've been here, it's still early, mm-hmm. right? So like, you know, I'm open to the fact that maybe
we won't like it. Love it like a in year the summer. From now. Like,
who knows?
Yeah. We moved in the winter. We might hate it in the summer.
But I got to tell you, so far it's a dream.
Same. I'm almost scared to say it out loud.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, this is everything I expected, but better.
It's wild.
Like, better than I expected.
Well, even just the fact that we have more room in our house, and like when I'm taking my trash out, I'm like, wow, I got to walk around a lot of house. But the fact that I can do that. It's spread out. Yeah. And like,
we don't share any walls. Oh, for the first time ever in our adult life, we don't share walls with anybody.
Yeah.
We've only ever lived in apartments and condos.
It's just been great. It's been surprisingly good for my mental state of being.
That was the other thing.
Yeah.
Like, all these unexpected pros happened after we moved, because I didn't even consider that, like, moving to a neighborhood like this where you're so close to water, like by the lakes. I wanted to be by water, but I didn't realize how much it affected my mental state positively, where I go on walks every morning to the lake and then I meditate at the lake, and it's a dream. Like, I open my eyes and there's just like a beautiful lake, and then I come back home and it doesn't really matter how stressful my day is, because that's just so calming to balance it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't really consider that at all.
No. And every time that we go anywhere, I'm always like, wait, we have this in our neighborhood? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Every time we go to a restaurant, I'm like, holy shit, this food is phenomenal.
Exactly.
This is here?
I know we're really rubbing it in, guys, but we just really dig it.
I don't feel like we're rubbing it in, because before it was a risk. It was like, okay, here's everything I think can happen and I hope can happen. And here's like the cons that might happen that I kind of, you know, would be scared about. But I really just didn't. You don't know until you get there. Like, we were talking about studying versus doing. You know, I could study all the best things about something, but until you go there and do it, you don't know if it's true.
Very true.
And so, yeah, it has been working out, and I really like that. And ultimately, you know, you could do all the logic stuff, which I highly recommend, and make your decisions there. But emotionally, it felt like the right thing to do, like
100%. I also, you know, truly don't like leaving our house now, which is,
yeah,
I didn't experience that before. I actually used to leave our house quite a bit before. Not that I had anything wrong with it, but
yeah,
LA in general, I think, was just stressing me out. Like, everything about LA was just stressing me out.
You know, both of us kind of take on other people's energies quite easily. Like, I know it's not like this for a lot of people, but if, like, let's say a friend comes over and their dog just died and they're really sad. I feel like my dog just died, and I don't even have a dog, but they'll leave and I'll just start crying.
Yeah.
Like, because I just absorb people's emotions and energies. And in LA at the time, because it's so dense and people are like on top of each other, and there's, you know, we're in apartments, and so there's a lot of people around, and it's the pandemic, so people are scared, people are losing their jobs, people are stressed, there's all kinds of stuff going on. I felt like I was just absorbing everything,
especially the last 2 years. It was really bad.
And then now being here, I'm like, whoa, I feel like I could breathe. I've been sleeping a lot, and I think it's just my body catching up on all like this rest from just crazy built up stress.
Same.
Yeah, but it's been interesting. A couple other things I just wanted to go through, because I think this is really helpful too. And if we're going to do this episode, I just want you to have this in mind too. But the mindset before you make a decision, like understanding what's involved before you make the jump, and then creating a game plan that might change as you adjust to new information. But just having that game plan there, I think, helps you be more confident in this new direction. Like, okay, if I go this way, here's my plan, and then just put one foot in front of the other and see what happens. And if, you know, something stands in the way, let's say, you know, you're driving somewhere and a deer crosses your path, you're not going to be able to continue driving through the deer. You got to go around it. You know, you're not just going to keep like sticking to the plan, even if something happens.
Right.
But having the initial plan is really good to get started. Imagining, this really helps me, is imagining like, okay, let's say I make this jump. What does my day-to-day really look like? It's easy to glamorize things, but like truly, like let's say I wake up and I'm in Vegas and now I'm there. Like, what does my day look like? Do I like it? Because sometimes you can get caught up in the good things and you don't really think about like what it actually entails. I think some of the people in the comments were worried about that when I had first said that, because they were from Vegas and they're like, you don't get it because you're just thinking about it from a tourist perspective and you're looking at it with rose-colored glasses. And so I was like, okay, maybe I'll take that into consideration. Like, what would it be like if I lived there day to day? And we actually spent a week living at our friend's house, like to see what the daily life was like.
I also think that people maybe don't necessarily know us insofar as they don't know that Nikki and I are the ultimate tourists.
True.
When people talk about like, hey, you don't want to go there because it's like, it's mostly touristy. We're, me and Nikki are like, oh, that's exactly where we want to fucking go, actually.
We like being tourists.
We love being tourists.
We also like I liked the idea of on date night, like being different characters every time. Because there's so many different types of people that visit Vegas. So we loved, like when we first started dating, we would do bits in malls where like, we'd be like a Jersey couple fighting about something.
Yeah.
And Steve would follow me around being like, baby, 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 no.
Baby.
And I'd be like, don't even talk to me.
I can explain.
I'm sick of it.
She's my sister.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
So we're like, what if we like, you know, had bachelorette parties or whatever? Or like, what if I was in my wedding dress and I was hiding in the poker room and being like, don't tell him I'm here. Just seems fun for us. We like that kind of shit.
Never see the same person twice, so it makes it really easy.
Exactly. But yeah, realistically evaluating the discipline involved, the time that you're going to be spending, the money you're spending, is this something you can really see yourself committing to? And just knowing that. And then lastly, asking others, and I would say be very careful with this one. I rarely do it, but if I do, it has to be someone that I really trust. And it's only when I'm really torn on the decision would I ask somebody what their opinion is on it before I make the decision.
Oh, sure.
And it has to be someone like Steve said, you know, don't just blanket someone, oh, this guy's smart, he's an engineer, so I'll ask him about crypto. No, someone in that field, like, or someone that knows what they're talking about in that particular topic.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, oh, you know, my uncle's a doctor and he's really smart, but he's a divorcee, so I'll ask him about my relationship.
Exactly.
You know, look at the person's category that they're giving advice on. And then also, I think it's good to get a second opinion. Like, if you're really excited about something, maybe someone can point out some cons that you're overlooking. Or if you're really afraid to make a move, maybe they can point out some of the more positives. You know, we almost didn't make an offer on this house because I was like getting too scared and I feel like I was sabotaging.
You were overthinking it.
I was overthinking it. And Jess Caldwell of Big Mood, really helped me. Like, she was like, well, think of this, and this. Like, you'd have this podcast room, because I was like, oh my gosh, on half of the house, the ceilings are so small in the rooms. And like, that was actually like one of my cons. I know.
They're not.
I know.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was just like looking at every little detail and being like, no, that's why we can't have that one.
I see.
And I think she did a good job at like being like, you're kind of crazy right now. Like, hey, let's look at this logically.
That makes sense. Well, I didn't even see the house yet. So like,
yeah,
I was just,
she hadn't seen it either, but she was just basing off of what I said my fears were. She was like, that is completely emotional and not logical at all. And I was like, oh, she's right. So then I made the offer on the house.
Nice.
Or if you don't want to talk to anyone about it because maybe you're scared of being made fun of, like let's say, like if I was 20 again and I was like, I want to go be a stand-up comedian, I don't really want to tell anybody because that sounds ridiculous. Watch videos of people that have done it. Like, read biographies of people that have done it. You know, people that you can get really valuable insight from them without ever having to talk to them. What else? You can also ask yourself, what advice would I give to a friend if they were asking me? That one is kind of insightful.
Sure.
To really get to the bottom of it. Like, am I making this decision based off of me and my excitement? Would I tell my friend to do this?
Right.
Yeah. And that's it. That's all I got on that.
Love it. Yeah. That's makes sense to me.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think we covered it pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, go out there and look at things. The thing I'd like you, I'm giving you homework because I am an Asian mom. And I am telling you to look at the last decision, or maybe you're on the fence about something right now. But look at the last major decision you made and think about if you did it out of emotion or if it was actually a logical choice. And maybe there's something that's been weighing on you that like it's like nagging you in the back of your mind. Like, I wonder what would have happened if. Like, those what ifs are going to kill you. Like, really, like, I urge you to do this exercise and maybe try something that you wouldn't have normally tried.
I love that.
I don't know.
Yeah, don't. And like Nikki's saying, like, doing it out of emotion is maybe something you have to go through so you can learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then it adds then to you your logical
remember that you
decisions in the future.
That, yeah, and then you're that you fucked up doing that. But in general, if you can avoid it, that would be great. But I think everyone's gotta learn that lesson.
Yeah.
At least once.
I think we have done an episode on failure and why it's good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, thanks for listening. Subscribe. If you want to, you know, catch us in future episodes, you know, that would be cool. That'd be kind of nice. If you like the episode, share it with a friend. That helps the show a lot. Also, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/sticky, STIKKI. Steve does a crypto corner every week, no matter what tier you're at. It's like a 3-hour live stream. He answers everybody's questions. We also do a live stream once a month. That's just us and we play games and we make a drink. It's fun. There's extra episodes of Shit They Don't Tell You. Culture They Don't Tell You After Dark. We do a lot of fun stuff. There's a Discord community. Talk about a forum.
It's the best.
If you want to catch up with any, there's different forums. There's like a crafty forum. There's a DIY. There's gaming. There's crypto, obviously. And then there's a general. So if you want to make friends and socialize with people.
It's the best group there is, man.
It really is. And I'm not just saying that.
No.
They're our group. But they are like just genuinely some of the nicest human beings I've ever met.
Yeah. Great vibes.
So yeah. There's that, and we love you guys, okay, and bye, I hope you're having fun out there. Happy 2022, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.